Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome today District Judge St. Eve of the Northern District of Illinois, who will be participating in today's cases.
Thank you, Judge Easterbrook. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our first case this morning is United States against Ayana. Mr. Tavitas.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Adam Tavitas, and I represent the defendant, Martin Anaya. Your Honor, what I have as far as the argument is all having to do with the actual sentencing. I believe there are three issues, the first being the court using acquitted conduct against Mr. Anaya to enhance his sentence. Second, that it was error to find the defendant responsible for the 150 kilos of cocaine that eventually he was sentenced to. And lastly, that his 30-year sentence was unreasonable based on the facts of the case and other sentences received by co-defendants. I actually first began representing Martin Anaya back in October 26th of 2010. And actually, I was the one that went to trial with Mr. Anaya. And from the very get-go, Mr. Anaya always told me that he did not do this as far as the killing of Christina Campos. There was a threat of a death penalty against him, and that didn't sway him. Had he gone to trial and got convicted of the murder, he would have faced a mandatory life sentence. So eventually we did go to trial, and the jury found a special verdict of that he was not responsible for the death of Christina Campos. There was other evidence throughout the, not only at the trial, but in my sentencing argument, as far as letters from some of the other co-defendants indicating that another Latin count, Mr. Anaya was a Latin king, but a Latin count had actually done the murder, and that even the trial evidence itself, Your Honors, is that no one came into court and identified Mr. Anaya as, yes, that is the person that killed Christina Campos. There was one identification, there was of a woman named Mary Gonzalez who gave 23 days after the actual shooting, indicated that she picked them out of an in-person lineup. However, 2 days after the actual shooting, she could not pick him out of a photographic lineup. Overall, there were thousands of patients.
The district court judge made very specific credibility findings in determining that your client was responsible for the murder. How do you get around that? And Ms. Gonzalez was one of them, but there are also two other witnesses.
There are two other witnesses, Your Honor, as far as who indicated Mr. Anaya was there. Those were from Latin counts, but those individuals, no one ever put a gun in Mr. Anaya's hand and said he's the one that shot him. Even Ms. Gonzalez, even at trial, Your Honor, indicated that he, in fact, was not, she did not pick him out. She's like, yeah, I did a lineup, and that's the person I identified. At no point, it doesn't seem to, too often when you're in court, and then like in a person, especially on trial for committing an act, usually the government or the state has, now do you see the person, you know, that did this in court? They did not even ask her that. And I just think in that attacking Ms. Gonzalez's credibility as far as inconsistent statements, I believe that's the way, and no other person indicating that Mr. Anaya was in fact the shooter, I believe that gets around the credibility, Your Honor. As far as the drug foreseeability, there was, again, throughout the discovery, there was no CI buys, no large drug transactions with Mr. Anaya. I mentioned he was an enforcer, but there was nothing ever presented at trial. And lastly, as far as the reasonableness of the overall sentence, I even indicated on my brief at first glance that it may seem that he should have gotten ecstatic with the 30-year sentence. However, I don't believe that the PSR was correct with the enhancement that was given to him. Other people with multiple homicides, as well as even those who did not cooperate, got less than 30 years. Of the 23 defendants in this case, 21 pled. Mr. Anaya is the only one who went to trial. No one else got a higher sentence than Mr. Anaya.
You argue disparity among the co-defendants, but hasn't this court said, in looking at disparity under the factors courts look at in 3553, that you don't look among co-conspirators, you look at disparity among judges and districts?
Well, I believe you can do that, but this was, I think, it's kind of a unique case, Your Honor, in the fact that there were so many defendants, and I had pointed out in my sentencing argument that of laying down of people charged with multiple homicides who are getting either less time or not enough time. I'm shouldn't say less time, but the same amount as Mr. Anaya, and those many of those people didn't even cooperate, and so no one else that pled guilty in this case other than with the murder.
Counsel, Judge St. Eve asked you a question about law, about the meaning of unjustified disparities in A6. Your answer needs to be an answer about law. Is there any legal basis for the argument you're making?
As far as the law, I cannot counter with what Your Honor had indicated to me. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Tavides. Mr. Mohabbat.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Amir Mohabbat. I represent the appellant, Dante Reyes. Mr. Reyes's appeal raises the following issue, and that is, did the district court err by accepting Mr. Reyes's guilty plea without a sufficient colloquy? The answer is yes. The government has taken the position that Mr. Reyes's change of plea hearing and his plea agreement have essentially sealed his fate. And Mr. Reyes respectfully disagrees. And I remind this Honorable Court of the U.S. Supreme Court's guidance in Fontaine versus United States, 411 U.S. 213 from the year 1973, that Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 11, like any other procedural mechanism, is neither always perfect nor invulnerable to subsequent challenge. A district court must engage a defendant in a meaningful dialogue before accepting his guilty plea. And this is to ensure that his change of plea is made intelligently and knowingly. The meaningful dialogue requires a test, one that ensures the defendant is knowingly giving up certain rights. In this case, Mr. Reyes was of the understanding that the government would recommend a 17-year sentence at the sentencing hearing as part of his change of plea. And Mr. Reyes thinks he had an agreement to that effect, and if there was such an agreement...
In what respect did the district court fail to comply with Rule 11?
Well, Your Honor, the colloquy was insufficient in our opinion. Essentially...
Could you be concrete? In what respect, concretely, did the judge fail to comply with Rule 11?
The questions that were asked of Mr. Reyes were essentially yes or no questions, or
right.
Yes or...
Look, when you answer in that way, I hear that your answer is he did comply with Rule 11, but we say he should have done more. Now, what is the basis in a rule, a statute, or a decision for a demand that he do more?
In my appellant's brief, Your Honor, I cite to a case from this circuit, United States versus Frye. And in that case, by not doing more, the court found the colloquy to have been insufficient pursuant to Rule 11. And that's 738 F. 2nd, 196 at page 201.
That almost sounds like an oxymoron. By not doing more than Rule 11, you fail to comply with Rule 11? That's not how we ordinarily talk about rules.
And I think this case is unique, Your Honor, and I understand it seems to be putting the cart before the horse, and that's certainly not my intention. But I
what
do cite
is it, counsel, that you would have had the district court do that you think would have brought it into compliance with Rule 11?
Asking the defendant, what do you understand your sentence is? What do you understand that it could be? As opposed to the very vague, do you understand you could get a lifetime sentence?
Do you have any law that would support that a district court has to ask a defendant to articulate him or herself?
Not specifically, Your Honor, but I'm hoping this case might establish precedent for the future. The plea agreement had no guideline range in it. It had no criminal history recitation in it. It had no discussion of possible enhancements. It very vaguely said, it says very vaguely that you can get a lifetime sentence or life incarceration. I don't think that's constitutionally sufficient.
But wasn't the district court judge very thorough on the fact that your client could face a lifetime sentence? And he even went on to tell him, do you understand you're not going to be able to come back here and challenge that? And do you understand that I am not bound by what the government is going to recommend, and the sentence is entirely up to me?
I recognize the transcript indicates Judge Lozano said those things. The problem, I think, is, you know, in a perfect world, a defendant standing before a judge is not going to be nervous. He's going to be able to absorb every word.
The judge might be nervous, too. You know, so what's that got to do with reality?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I said, what's that got to do with reality, the fact that he's nervous?
Because
are you nervous now?
Not exactly, Your Honor.
Gotta be.
But Mr. Reyes is not able to absorb every word said at him,
sure,
just like
true.
Any defendant cannot when he's facing the person who has really all control of his life in his hands.
Is there anything in the record that would support that, especially the fact that your client, unlike many defendants who come before the court, had a master's degree? Isn't it a stretch to ask this court that someone with a master's degree didn't understand the questions that were very thoroughly posed by the district court here?
His master's degree is an issue. He's educated. He is fluent in English. I think these things actually go to show how dangerous it could possibly be if even an educated man can find himself in a situation like Mr. Reyes does. And I turn to your Honor's question from a few seconds ago concerning the record. Page 20 of the sentencing transcript, lines 10 through 17. I'm sorry, page 20, lines 10 through 16. The government makes reference to how, quote, in quick plea, unquote, discussions, we thought maybe a 17-year sentence would be appropriate. As far as Mr. Reyes is concerned, there wasn't a quick discussion. He thought there was an agreement. And that's why he went forward and changed his plea. And there's that vagueness, Your Honor, was
alluding to. But how do you get around the fact, if you look at page 21, that the judge went on to say, and even if the government makes one recommendation, and your attorney makes another recommendation, and you make another, I will have the final say?
It does seem to say that, Your Honor. And
it
just
definitely says
sure.
that. How do you
sure.
get around that?
I just go back to Mr. Reyes not fully getting his mind wrapped around the circumstances due to fear, unfamiliarity with Judge Lozano. He had gone through a couple of attorneys. I think Mr. O'Toole, the attorney at sentencing, was a second attorney who was appointed to him.
So he got twice as much legal advice as he was.
Perhaps, Your Honor, perhaps. So, you know, could he have absorbed every word? No, nobody can. And I think some things unfortunately fall through the cracks. The best way to make sure it doesn't happen is to ask a defendant, what sentence do you understand I could impose? If Mr. Reyes said, you
lock
me up
forever. Did he give him the maximum sentence? Did he tell him what the maximum was?
Life.
Yeah, didn't he? Is that what the judge told him? I can sentence you to life.
To which I believe he asked, do you understand I can sentence
yeah.
you to life? And
well,
he said,
right.
I know, or I agree, don't or yes, Your Honor.
He knew that he was possibly going to get life. Anything less than life, then, is a break to him.
Except when a defendant hears questions where every answer is going to be, yes, Your Honor, they get into a pattern. So they think they want the court to hear them say, yes, Your Honor.
You want to revamp Rule 11 and say, you have to go through each. You might get this, you might get that.
I don't know.
I sympathize with your point of view, but there you go.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
I see
it.
My red light is on now.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Heller.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Kirby Heller. I represent the government. Starting with Mr. Anaya, the district court did not err in either calculating the guidelines or in sentencing Mr. Anaya to 30 years of imprisonment. The district court followed the guidelines. The district court was entitled to, in determining what was the underlying racketeering activity, to consider acquitted conduct, and it did. It also did not err in finding as a factual matter, clearly err in finding as a factual matter, that Mr. Anaya was responsible for the Campos murder. There was, as Your Honor indicated, there was an eyewitness who testified that a man whom she identified from the lineup as Mr. Anaya ran from a van, went to the area between two cars, shot down at the ground, and that was the precise spot where the victim was, ran back, and then got into the van that sped off. The district court found that testimony credible, and that alone is sufficient to find that the district court did not clearly err. There was other evidence that corroborated Ms. Gonzalez's testimony. I won't go through it. It's in our brief. But that factual finding was not clearly erroneous. The same thing for the drug quantity. Again, the judge is well established that the district court can find drug quantity by a preponderance of the evidence. And again, we summarize that evidence in our brief. And unless there are questions, I'll rely on our brief for that point.
And what specific evidence did the district court rely on for the drug quantity other than his role in the gang and the comment that the gang distributed a lot of drugs?
It was that. It was Mr. Anaya's long-term membership in the Latin Kings. He was a member of the Latin Kings. I believe the testimony was for more than 20 years. It was discussed. Drugs were discussed at their meetings. I believe those were the primary points. It really, the district court didn't have any problem at all in attributing vast quantities of drugs to Mr. Anaya. And finally, the district court did not abuse its discretion in sentencing Mr. Anaya to 30 years of imprisonment. That was, in fact, a downward variance. His guidelines were life. And the district court considered the disparity argument as well as other factors and picked an appropriate sentence. There is one other matter, though, that I want to bring up about the sentence. In preparing for oral argument just the other day, I realized that the judgment says that that Mr. Anaya is sentenced to 30 years of imprisonment on the two counts, count one, RICO, and count two, the drug conspiracy, to run concurrent. And actually, the RICO conspiracy carries a 20-year term of imprisonment. So I believe the appropriate course would be for this court to remand, to order a limited remand for the district court to correct that sentence on the RICO conspiracy. And I mentioned this to Mr. Tavitas this morning. As to Reyes, the district court, this court rather, should dismiss the appeal because Mr. Reyes waived his appeal. The district court did a very careful Rule 11 colloquy. There are, I believe, three or four pages alone on the appeal waiver. The district court explained it at every step. He gave examples, as Your Honor indicated, that if you end up not happy with the sentence, you can't come back under this appeal waiver and complain about that. He talked about what the government's recommendations would be, and the government's recommendation in the plea agreement was that it would recommend a sentence at the bottom of the guidelines range as it is determined by the court. There's no mention in the plea agreement or at the plea colloquy about 17 years. The district court even asked Mr. Reyes whether there was any other promises made, and Mr. Reyes said no. That's on page 22 of the plea transcript. And finally, at sentencing, even Mr. Reyes acknowledged in making his sentencing statement to the court, where he was very remorseful, that he understood that he could face up to life imprisonment. So he knew what his penalties would be, and the district court did a very thorough job of explaining that. If there are no questions, then we'll rest on our brief. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Tavitas?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
And, Your Honor, just for the record, I did speak with Ms. Heller. I have no objection as far as what she indicated, as far as the limited remand on the year. Just two things I wanted to point out as far as the specific evidence of the drug dealing of Mr. Anaya is that although he was older, as far as a long-term membership, there was no evidence that he was active in going to all the meetings and that he was actually involved in any of this large drug dealing or even had any knowledge that the drug dealing was going on. And my last point as far as the overall reasonableness of the sentence, I don't believe in looking at all the other co-defendants that anyone who was not convicted of a murder, in which case Mr. Anaya was not convicted of murder, came even close to the 30-year sentence. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and Mr. Tavides and Mr. Mohabit, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointments in this case.